This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies, and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Oh, thank you, Bhante. Over to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Am I to continue now?
Yes, you may continue.
Now, ready to go?
Anytime you wish.
Everybody's ready to go? All right.
Yes, we are ready.
My subject for tonight, I think it just squeezes into the 2 half-hour periods, is the 7 factors of enlightenment. In Pali, it's the Sat Bhojanga. A very crucial and important item. And I felt that everybody should have a background, at least in the theory of this. It's rather difficult, in a way, to become a master of it without the Anapanasati, without experience in. That's the Sutta 118 in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Anapanasati, in and out breath. At the very end of that, the Buddha talks about the 7 factors of enlightenment, and these are crucial to enlightenment. And some knowledge of them is at least the terminology is very important. I'll continue with these. We have in the 7 factors of enlightenment, we have the first one we want to consider is mindfulness, and that's the central factor, sati. It sits in the middle if you draw a star, and it is a balancer for the whole and stabilizer for the whole of them. On the other side, let's say we take energy or effort or three active factors. We have energy, investigation, and rapture. On the other side, we have the stabilizing factors of concentration or stillness, equanimity, and tranquility. And we'll go into each one. All right, so we're starting with mindfulness. Sati is the Pali word, sati. All right. Mindfulness is the factor in the center of the seven factors. And it is the central factor that observes and balances the whole. Of course, as we would like to be able to practice mindfulness all of the time, not just on meditation sessions or in meditation sessions. The usual practice, however, is to notice the strength or weakness of our mindfulness whenever we think of it. How am I doing? In other words, is the question we ask ourselves. Will be the question, especially with mindfulness, because we want that quality of balance to keep our practice on the right track. It sees what is happening in each moment if we are alert, and sees how each of the other six factors are performing. Keeping mindfulness awake means that we will stay aware of what is going on both in the outside world around us and in our minds as well. At this point, with our mindfulness fully engaged, we begin to live our life fully, our lives more fully. The first task of mindfulness is to see what is going on in the present moment clearly, without reacting. We can then live fully in the present moment without judging, without movement toward or away from what is observed. This new freedom allows us to directly perceive the reasons why we act the way we do and why our interactions with other people and the world come out as they do. The next job of mindfulness is to act as a guardian and teacher for the other factors of enlightenment. It strengthens our ability to investigate all that we do in life and learn better ways of reacting and accepting events that occur to us as we go through the circumstances of our life. Out of this attention grow wisdom and love. Balancing the whole mind is the third function of mindfulness. Even in times of confusion, attachment, or even pain, mindful attention can bring us back into balance. Mindfulness observes without reacting when some quality of our mind is either too strong or too weak. The balancing feature of mindfulness comes into play by simply seeing what is happening and investigating to open a clear space for the mind to rebalance itself in an appropriate way. Of course, the four foundations of mindfulness, which I'm sure you've heard, you know about, are an important way to practice mindfulness. The first foundation is the physical body and the world around us. The second is feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings. The mind often has difficulty in dealing with strong feelings because of attraction, aversion, and even neutral feelings cause problems. Here is the opportunity for mindfulness. Mindfulness can show us how we react in patterns and how much better it would be to avoid feeling emotional patterns. The third foundation of mindfulness is contents of our mind and heart. Here we see that our mind, body, and all our actions and feelings are without self, and all are impermanent, and all are suffering. In daily practice, we can develop our mindfulness muscles as well as in meditation retreats. Paying attention mindfully to all our activities at work, at home, in the family, or alone will reveal all of those hidden patterns of habit and fear that control our actions and thoughts. We will begin to experience the difference between we will begin to experience the difference between excuse me, the difference between when we live with attachment and when we are relatively free, when caught in identification, and when there is wisdom. Mindfulness brings us the possibility of being free from compulsion, and as we grow stronger in this quality of mind, our awareness will bring us the fruits of our work. We will be less reactive. Number two, the second quality that we're going to, second factor that we're going to take up is effort or energy. Virya is the Pali word. Virya is the word for energy. We may be concerned, and it is obviously from the name, it is an active quality. We may be concerned that we won't have enough energy to do the practice, but the more we open ourselves, the more energy and effort flow into us. Once we make a channel, the energy will use it, just as a ditch digger will lead a ditch. The water will flow into it. It is the energy of opening and expansion, not of breaking down walls. It is the power of the heart. If we make a wholehearted effort in our practice, the effort itself brings in more energy. Effort supports us. It is not the quality of straining or fighting. The first great effort is to... there are four great efforts in Virya. The first great effort is to foster wholesome states that are already part of our being. We foster the wholesome states that are already there. For example, allowing generous thoughts to continue rising in the mind, we make the effort to protect them and develop them. The second great effort is to avoid getting caught up in unskillful states that have already arisen. So, for example, if we see a state such as greed come up in our minds, we remember the suffering that greed has caused us in the past and let that quality go to the best that we of our ability at that time. Their third effort is to develop beautiful states that have not yet arisen in us, such as possibly love, forgiveness, and awareness. And the fourth great effort is to avoid unskillful states that have not yet arisen. Now we'll go on to the next factor, which is investigation of phenomenon. In Pali, it's Dhamma Vicaya. It's not Vicaya. It's Dhamma Vicaya. And what that means is phenomenon. Vicaya means investigation. And the Dhamma, it's fairly well understood to mean phenomena of body and mind, which the sati, sati looks at and looks at constantly. Let's see, we can say investigation of nature. What makes one a true practitioner of the Dhamma is finding the truth for oneself without relying on what others say or what or have said in the past. Practice requires courage, and the spirit of investigation requires us to look deeply and fearlessly into whatever experience arises. In undertaking the task to understand and free ourselves, we must learn to observe and examine every state and realm that arises. We may face a vision of death in our meditation, or come to grips with a difficult relationship in our meditation. Gradually, we will start to see the truth of the statement, "This is how things are." Every experience has something to teach about karma, impermanent suffering, and non-self. Understanding into the true nature, into the true nature of our body and mind is not intellectual. As long as there is no insight into the truth of who we are, it is as if we lived in darkness. Investigation, once developed, is like turning on a bright light in a dark room. We can discover our deepest fears and places of identification and clinging, and see their patterns of operation in our lives. To do this, we must be willing to open our hearts and minds to our deepest pains and fears. Maturity and practice will have us looking into our attachments and ideals, our beliefs, relationships, family, and work in all the domains of our life. This investigation is supported by wise reflection, associating with wise people, and questioning based on sincere desire for the truth, to discover the truth. If investigation becomes excessive, it can lead to over-intellectualism or becoming lost in questions and analyses. If too weak, we can become lost in blind faith, either in a belief system or in a person. What is needed is a faith in the possibility of awakening the investigation to see how it can be done, a commitment to our own direct understanding. The next factor is also an active factor. It's called rapture, joy or rapture, and in Pali it's piti. Rapture can be called joy or interest, rapture, joy or interest. The quality of rapture is an ease and openness of mind that looks on each new experience with the question, what do I have to learn from this experience? Even in great difficulty, this factor can say, even this is something I can work with. When we become deeply concentrated in meditation, rapture becomes very strong, and as our whole energetic system is affected, and our whole energetic system is affected at that point. This level of rapture and interest comes as the result of the powerful states that steady concentration and a composed mind can generate. A whole range of physical states and inner senses of extreme well-being can arise from PT. The physical states range from floods of joy, like the waves on the seashore, to uplifting joy and feelings of floating or even flying, to suffusing joy, which pervades the whole body. All these different aspects are born out of the unification of mind and body and heart as we enter our present moment experience with strong concentration and interest. It is one of the magical aspects of practice to discover and experience the range of rapturous feelings and lightness of the heart. Excuse me. Now we turn to the first of our stabilizing factors, concentration, and the Pali word is samadhi. I'm sure you're familiar with samadhi. Concentration is often referred to as a deep stillness or calm. And this is Ajahn Brahm's preferred name, stillness or calm. I can't always stick to that. Sometimes I say concentration, so bear with me. It is the first of the three stabilizing factors we will take up now. Stillness arises when the mind is steadily focused on one meditation object. Its steadiness gives the mind tremendous strength. The concentrated mind has the ability to penetrate deeply into the processes of mind and body, and even to explore other realms of consciousness. We begin our practice with a mind out of control, untrained, turbulent, filled with thoughts, plans, and likes and dislikes. There is a constant barrage of sense impressions and reactions to them. As the mind becomes more collected, more focused and still, we can begin to penetrate through layers of thought and see how thoughts and feelings simply rise and pass away moment by moment. The concentrated mind can cut through these seemingly solid processes and see its moment-by-moment impermanence. A single object meditation, usually taught here, focuses the mind and stops its discursive thinking. It brings about steady and peaceful states. We may focus on breath, on a mantra, on a feeling such as metta, loving kindness, or on a light or visualization. This causes profound steadiness of mind and a one-pointed stillness with the meditation object. Learning to concentrate our attention is central to mastering the art of meditation, as the mind is difficult to steady. The training requires determination and perseverance to bring ourselves back again and again to our meditation object. Each time we begin to meditate, we encounter the forces of the wandering mind, all the desires, fears, and resistances that keep the mind in motion. These may also include pain, tension in the body, anger states, loneliness, grief, longing, and any unfinished business that the mind protects us from feeling deeply. The mind can protect us from feeling these deeply. To calm the mind, we must learn the art of settling, releasing, and passing through the layers. What can we do to learn this art? What it takes is practice, consistency, a discovery of the right spirit, and a sense of balance in the meditation. And then when we begin to experience the fruit of even a little concentration, it becomes rewarding, even exciting. There is a natural happiness and a feeling of well-being that arises when we finally touch the steadiness and clarity that concentration brings. As we become more experienced in concentration, concentration becomes more a skill than an obstacle to surmount. One level, especially worth noting, is called access concentration. It is achieved when the mind has few discursive thoughts and almost no wandering from the meditation object. There is a deep steadiness and a collection of attention on the present moment. The steadiness of concentration at this level can be used to gain access to higher states of absorption. There is a spontaneous arising of light and rapture and factors of calm and steadiness, these factors become strong as one develops full concentration on a single object. Whether from mild or powerful levels of concentration, insights arise that bring understanding, presentness, and a deep capacity to let go and live more freely. Much more could be said about concentration, for it produces most of the altered states that arise in meditation, visions, lights, access to other states of consciousness and other realms of being, rapture, and more. And so we are very close to the half-hour period, and I think this is a good place to stop, and we can start our meditation. And I'm asking you how you want me to conduct this meditation. Generally, yes.
If you would like to offer a 30-minute guided meditation, that would be wonderful.
All right. And if
you have some more questions?
Yeah, we have questions now?
Oh, no, I'm just asking you, do you have a question?
Questions for me. No. I'm ready to begin if everyone else is. If anyone has any urgent questions, feel free to ask them. Anybody wants to say anything? Okay, then we will start the meditation. 7:30 by my clock. All right. So let's begin and address our body and make sure that we are in a mindful and relaxed state without bearing any tension in our whole body, especially in our shoulders and neck area, and letting our face relax and letting that relaxation flow down our trunk and to our hips, and letting any tension in the arms flow out through the fingers, and letting picking up the any feelings we have in our trunk and letting it flow down the hips and the legs and down to the feet, and letting any undue tension flow out through the soles of the feet. And we can, I invite you to do this anytime during the meditation, anytime that you feel tension somewhere, just to focus your attention on it and let it free up, let it go, let it flow out. Be kind to the tension. Don't reject it. Don't hate anything. Let your heart be open to anything that comes in. Let it come in. Whatever comes, let it come. Whatever goes, let it go. Just let that flow in and out. Let whatever these things are that come to us, let them come in and see them and let them go. Don't hold on to them. Just let them go and continue meditating. And so we meditate now and take a deep breath and let our breathing be smooth and uncontrolled. We're not doing any yogic breathing. We're not controlling the breath. Just in and out breath as our normal breath is. In and out. Just take a normal breath and that's it. That's the breath. And keep on this ordinary breathing in and out. And now once in a while I will interject some kind of coaching to remind you to stay on the track. If your body needs adjusting, if your posture needs adjusting, change your sitting posture. Change it to whatever is comfortable and will allow you to meditate for a half hour. Whenever thoughts have invaded our mind, if any have, then just see them and let them go. Any business can be settled later, after the class. Hold it for later, whatever comes up. Feel the deep peace of the meditation. Feel any tingling that might come up. This is piti.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, then the next is a factor is tranquility. That's a nice one to consider right now. And the Pali name is...
Did you do equanimity?
Equanimity is at the end.
Oh, I got it backwards. Okay.
Well, there is no... It depends on what you take as your order. I'm not, my order is irrelevant, really.
Okay.
It's not relevant. I mean, you could take the order that's in the 118 of the Majjhima Nikaya, Anapanasati. You could take the order at the end of that if you want. But anyway, so the next stabilizing factor is tranquility. We often overlook the mind's capacity to settle down and rest, to become deeply silent and peaceful. To support tranquility in practice, we need to foster stillness in the body, calmness of breath, and an inner ease and restfulness. Exercise, breath exercises, sitting as in meditation, I suppose, calming, can all be practiced. Tranquility is also fostered by a time alone and by time in nature. Mentally, the most direct way of coming to rest is to learn to let go of our likes and dislikes. We are so attached to our judgments and plans and ideas as though we knew what was going to happen. A great sense of this tranquility comes when we let go of the futile urge to control everything and instead relate to each moment with openness and awareness. Inner calmness is a way of being that is a transforming episode of our lives. Taking one thing at a time as our focus, letting the imperfection of life be as it is, foster a sense of the present, a contentment with the moment. As our skill in meditation grows, we can learn the art of letting go and finding a calm center in the midst of our changing senses. As we sit, extraordinary levels of silence and peace can open up for us. We can learn how happiness comes from a heart at rest, not from changing outer circumstances. All this can be discovered as a power and fruit of our practice. And this final factor, as I said, is equanimity. Upekka is the Pali word. Equanimity. An image used to illustrate the quality of equanimity is that of a mountain. The mountain sits through all events, unwavering. And we can sit through all events, inner and outer, unwavering. Equanimity is the power of the mind to experience changes in the realms of form, feeling, mind, and yet remain centered and unmoved. Equanimity is developed as we learn to keep our hearts open through the changing circumstances of our life and practice. As we grow in wisdom, our heart also matures from an outgoing exuberance of youth with its conditioned fears and desires to a heart of greatness. Again and again, we are challenged to return to this moment. However painful or present or pleasant or boring, and to let it into our heart, greet it with balance. Whatever it is, greet it with balance. Whatever comes, let it come. In its strongest stages, equanimity gives the feeling of unshakable stability and able to be upset by any experience whatsoever. We can find that a profound equanimity arises as we release our identification with this body-mind process. As our practice shows how temporary and ungraspable is every aspect of life, we begin to feel a deep letting go of all our attachments to various aspects of ourself, our ideas, beliefs, images, feelings, fears, even our body. They are all temporary conditions. They are not ours. They are not I, me, or mine. To experience this truth in practice brings profound equanimity and liberation. People think that spiritual practice makes a person ineffectual or passive. In fact, qualities like equanimity have tremendous power. They are the inner strength of the heart that our greatness draws upon. There is the story in the Zen tradition that illustrates this. During a time of civil war in Korea, a certain general led his troops through province after province, overrunning whatever stood in his way. The people of one town, knowing that he was coming and having heard of his cruelty, all fled into the mountains except one. The general arrived in the town and sent his troops out to search the town. They reported back that only one person remained in the town, and that was a Zen priest. The general strode over to the temple, walked in, drew his sword, and said, "Don't you know who I am? I am the one who can run you through without batting an eyelash." The priest looked back and calmly responded, "And I, sir, am one who can be run through without batting an eye." The general, hearing this, bowed and left. A beautiful story. Equanimity, then, is a quality of mind and heart that, when developed, allows one to meet every kind of experience with both strength and a softness or fluidity that doesn't get caught by circumstances. To discover its power within is one of the great joys of practice. And I won't go on. That is the seven factors of enlightenment. Very important, crucially important. And I hope that even if one or two things that you've heard will inspire you to keep meditating and to look in deeper into the practice and into these factors, or whatever you're studying, you may be studying, then I'll consider it worthwhile. And I hope that there might be some kind of questions.
I'm sure we have some questions for you, Bhante. Sky, did you have some further comments you'd like to make?
No, actually, I'm reflecting on a beautiful poem by Walt Whitman, and it's called Me Imperturbed. And I'm just fascinated with the word, the feeling of never being perturbed again.
And, I would love that. Yes, that's a beautiful.
Yes, and it's a short poem. If you want, I can read it really fast because I looked it up because I wish I could memorize it. Me, imperturbed, standing at ease in nature, master of all or mistress of all, a plum in the midst of irrational things, imbued as they, passive, receptive, silent as they, finding my occupation, poverty, notoriety, foibles, crimes, less important than I thought, me, private or public or mental or solitary, all these subordinate, I am eternally equal with the best. I am not subordinate. Me toward the Mexican Sea, or in the Manhattan, or in the Tennessee, or far north, or inland, a riverman, a man of the woods, or of any farm life of these states, this is the United States, American poet, or the coast, or the lakes of Canada, me, wherever my life is lived, oh, to be self-balanced for contingencies, oh, to confront night, storms, hunger, ridicule, accidents, and rebuffs, as the trees and animals do. I just love that poem.
Excellent.
Sorry, I had to do it.
good reading. Very good reading. Very moving.
A beautiful reading. Thank you, Sky. Anybody else?
Thank you very much.
Question?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a quick one.
Yes.
And it's on investigation. And I've listened to Ajahn Amachado talk about when he sits to meditate that he, if he's not peaceful right away, that he'll immediately investigate. And I can see myself going down this same rabbit hole. So maybe you could explain that.
You spoke so quickly, I didn't quite pick up the question. Do you want to know what it is we should be investigating?
If I sit down to meditate and I'm not peaceful, if I start investigating, I'm thinking more that, oh, I can think of a million things.
Okay.
A million reasons why I'm not peaceful.
Let me try to. It's linked with sati. Sati is mindfulness. And mindfulness takes in any phenomenon of the body and mind. And the investigation is of any of those items. So it's linked with sati in my readings of what I have. So I don't know if that helps. you just take your emotional states, for one thing. Might be something that you investigate or somebody else's emotional state. Whatever occurs to you that you would be mindful of, then you can investigate that. Your own body and mind are probably the forerunner or the primary thing that you would want to investigate in your practice. Would that help at all?
It does. It definitely does. I think I was misunderstanding.
Okay, anybody else? Oh, Chris, I can't hear you.
Thank you, Bhante. I did that 3 times last week, so thank you very much.
Oh.
I thought I'd broken that habit. Is there anybody else who would like to ask a question? We'd really welcome you to ask any question you would like about meditation practice, or any reflections on this evening.
Yes, we have plenty of time. So, somebody's waving.
Gloria, thank you. Gloria, would you like to go ahead?
Yes. So during the talk, you mentioned one thing which I felt very connected to, that you say, if you don't understand your attachment, or I don't remember exactly, but it's like you're like living in the darkness.
Oh yes.
And I certainly feel this confusion very much, because I have a feeling like I don't really. I think I suffer a lot from attachment, but I don't really understand my attachment very much, that I cannot. I have a feeling like I'm being controlled by them, but I'm like in this total confusion that I cannot really see my attachment and really like break free from them. So how to like understand my attachment in a better way so that I can be free from them. Yes.
Yes. Well, you've just illustrated or defined a problem that everyone has. This is our state of mind. We're in a confused, dark world of things happening, and we don't understand why. We don't understand why, for one thing. We don't understand where they're going to, where they come from, and where they're going to are all mysteries. We have to look into every single thing. So pick one thing. Don't try to deal with a whole mass of confusions at once. Pick one thing that is most concern to you. Don't try to deal with everything at once, and make that your practice. Right? Is that clear? And work on one thing at a time. Whatever seems to you obvious, that's something that maybe it's a relationship that needs to be worked on. Maybe that's something that is really causing your world to be darker or lighter. Maybe it's your job, or maybe it's some bodily problem that you have, you or somebody else. I'm just naming things that you would look at. What are these mental things that keep occurring to you? Why do these things? Why can't I get these things out of my mind? You ask yourself these become your questions, and you deal with them. That's what this whole seven factors of enlightenment is about, right? Really, it's about dealing with one thing after another. I don't know if that's any help or not, but try not to deal with everything at once. Try to pick one thing. Try to examine it like a detective, right? You become the detective. The detective doesn't try to track down everybody at once. He picks out one, and sees how that thing is working. I mean, when does it come? When does it go? When I do this, what does it do? Find out. You don't really know. You're not your own self. Okay?
Okay. It's a bit hard, but yeah, I get what you mean. Thank you.
The practice isn't easy, but pick out something that you feel that you can do, and give yourself some positive feedback, and do it, and don't expect to work miracles. This is the path. This process and work is a long path, and working on the seven factors is nothing that you can do. You can start working on them, but you can't become a master of them in a short amount of time. And the same with overcoming all the problems that you may have in your mind and body. Some of them take a long time. So be kind to yourself. That's the number one thing. Don't be down on yourself because you're in a dark room and you haven't found the switch yet. It's not your fault you're in a dark room and you haven't found the switch. That's the situation that you're in. You didn't put yourself there. Okay? It will become clearer. That's the fruit of your work. It will become clearer. Okay.
It will become clearer. Sounds good advice, Bhante. Thank you. It gives us hope. Is there anybody else who'd like to ask a question? Thank you, Gloria. Oh, here we go. Dear Bhante, how do we renounce or let go when it's your loved ones who are attached to what you could be or do for it or do for them? Would you like to? Are you okay there, Bhante? Would you like me to read it again, or is it okay?
So, yeah, read it again. You can read it again.
Dear Bhante, how do we renounce or let go when it's your loved ones?
Somebody's rattling something. I don't know.
Yes, I've just... who are attached to what you could be or do for them.
Well, how can you be detached from your loved ones in the first place? And what are the benefits of becoming detached from their likes and dislikes and so on? The benefits are that you have freedom of movement in your own practice, and that your practice isn't tied to their likes and dislikes, right? I mean, you have to take a stand somewhere. You're not them, they're not you. You know, you're in a battle. You're in a pitched battle for your own life. So take control of your own life. And if somebody is standing in your way and won't let you through, then you have to face the fact that that's what's happening and feel what's going on and let them know. And if that doesn't work, you have to be responsible and do whatever's necessary. All right? You have to do what's necessary. And I can't tell you that, and no one else can. Only you can decide that. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Bhante. Is there anyone else? Oh, yes, Martha's got a hand up. Thank you, Martha. Would you like to go ahead and unmute?
Yes.
And sorry, Martha. Justice just said, yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
The last question. Yes, thank you.
Related to that question about detaching from the parents or from the family's views, would you have any good advice, say, for example, for a child who is in a situation, or just teaching this, for a child who's in a situation that they cannot get out of because they're not capable yet of, they haven't graduated from school, they're not independent yet, they're required, you know, they've got to live somewhere within, and they've got to stay with their family. Would you have any good advice for, you know, that sort of situation where someone maybe was in an arranged marriage or something where they really had to stay in that? Or could you speak to that?
If it's a serious...
We talk about out of conditions, you know.
Yes. If it's a serious question, there may need to be some kind of counseling. And then that child needs to go to a counselor or somebody responsible. I don't know how serious this situation is. They would have to judge whether they could deal with it or not. Maybe they can't deal with it, and then they have to go to someone who can. Right? So first of all, you have to judge the severity of the situation. If it's just a common, ordinary family problem, maybe they can deal with it themselves, and they have to realize that certain things in the world just can't, as we said many times during this talk, just have to be accepted as the situation that we're in now, and we have to learn to live with certain problems. I mean, everybody has, their parents have problems, and they have problems, and it's not so easy, but they have to learn to adapt to the situation and not expect their parents to be perfect or whoever.
Well, what is flat out abuse? Say, for example, maybe a kid was homosexual and his father was abusive about it or something of that nature. I'm talking about like really, really trying outer circumstances, but one is trapped in them. Or like being a slave or something.
Oh,
you know,
dear.
Like
well, in that situation, they probably would need to seek out someone to help them, some kind of counselor or someone to go to that would give them aid. And there must be, for whatever situation they're in, there must be people who are concerned and interested. You named one. I can't believe that there aren't societies set up to help people who are in certain kinds of situations, and they can get in touch with them. and get help. Right?
Yes, I agree with you. I second that emotion. Is there anything that you would say from a meditation standpoint, a mantra, or anything that could be helpful that I can pass on to somebody, a child?
Well, any amount of meditation for a child would probably be beneficial. No, I don't have any mantras to pass on. I don't deal in mantras, and they're all right. I just don't. It's not the field that I'm in. Mantras, but you know, if a person can, if a person can use them with benefit, then fine. And all right. If a person can use whatever they can use. Bhante Ji, my teacher, has photographs of himself with these little children meditating. They were on either side. Yeah, and he's very proud of this. He loves to meditate with little children.
I love watching him. I like to meditate with him too, so I'll get on that Zoom call sometimes.
Oh, really? Great. I guess we could go on.
I think we've actually reached our magic time, Bhante.
All right.
So I was wondering, Bhante, would you like to leave us with a blessing this evening in Pali or English, whichever you prefer?
Oh, well, my favorite chant is short, and it's...
Lovely.
All right. Sabe Buddha Bala Pata Pachekanang Chayang Balang Arhatanang Tatejena Rakang Bandami Sabaso. And what that means is Sabe Buddha Balapata means may all the Buddhas, may all of the Buddhas, Pachekanang Chayang Balang, including the Pacheka Buddhas, those are the secret Buddhas. Arahatanang tatejena, and including all of the arahats. And using their power, I secure for all of you security in every way.
Thank you, Venerable. Thank you very, very much, Bhante, for a very, very pleasant evening.
Enjoyed it very much. See you next time.
Thank you. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
And thank you again for the poem. Thank you.